Welcome to Wheels Across the West, History and Legacy of the Santa Fe Trail, a production by the students at the Kinder Institute on Constitutional Democracy at the University of Missouri, presented by the Missouri Humanities Council. I'm Greg McKerney, your host for this episode, Media and Memory. Shootouts and saloons, cowboys and cattle, oil barons and Indian raids. These are some of the terms that have come to define the American West. Through the creation of Hollywood Westerns, the violence, peril, and romance of the story of the Wild Wild West has been exaggerated. Modern-day perceptions of the West are rooted in mythology, often to the disappointment of kids whose parents frequent historical roadside attractions linked to the American West. But what is the reality of this fictional narrative? Are these exaggerations rooted in some truth? How can historians use myth and legend to educate others on the good, the bad, and the ugly of Western expansion? The 20th century saw the rise of TV and radio. These new forms of public media came with new pursuits of entertainment. Radio broadcasts established narratives of danger, love, and racial stereotypes regarding the American West, like the story of the dangers of Dodge City and Gunsmoke. These stereotypes would also be enforced through visual and auditory entertainment, like the tale of the Robin Hood-like figure, the Cisco Kid, whose Mexican-American background would be played up over radio broadcast. New forms of media brought new perceptions of the American West. The automobile made the sites where Westerns were filmed more popular than the ghost towns of the true American West. The rise of video games gave the player control of the narrative surrounding their own personal cowpoke adventure. The murky water of reality and proper representation of the American West became ever more clouded. In this episode of Wheels Across the West, we'll navigate through the gunsmoke that covers Hollywood Westerns by taking a look at how the American West has been portrayed in media over the past 75 years, from radio shows of the 1950s to the video game interpretation of a Western tale in the Red Dead Redemption series. Has the Santa Fe Trail stood the test of surviving the Hollywood West? Or has the trail's importance and the historical reality of the West gone up in gunsmoke? But what is the public interpretation without the public? I turn to the people around my community, young and old, invested in history and those who couldn't give a hoot or a holler about Western expansion, to ask them about what they think of when I say the Old West.
American West, I think. Texas, cattle drives, kind of just the cowboy in general, you know, that whole era, and Dust Bowl.
I mean, I think everyone kind of thinks of that, like, quintessential cowboys and horses and, like, cowboy boots and dust. And I just sort of think of, like, westward expansion and you got, like, covered wagons. And it's definitely this, like, Americanized ideal sort of, like, fantasy version of the Wild West and, like, lawless land and things like that.
Cowboys, guys riding horses, driving cattle. Just about as free as you can be. When I think of the American West, I think of like Manifest Destiny, the American Dream, just the purest freedom in the purest sense of the word is where the American West is somewhere you could go and reinvent yourself and become the man that you wanted to be.
When I say the American West, what comes to your mind?
So I'm going to be very vague because I don't know that much, but when I think of the West, I think of kind of like westward expansion and a bunch of like Americans moving west for like resources, gold, all of that kind of stuff. So
more history side of things. So the history of the American West, you know, traveling, settlers and stuff like that. Personally, I think of Westerns too. I grew up watching Westerns with my grandpa and stuff. So, you have your, like I said, the settlers, your cowboys and Native Americans, that type of ideas, I guess.
I always think of rugged and dusty and hard work and really difficult things that you face. The landscape of when we think of the Southwest is all of those things. Now, it's certainly changed over time, but it not easy is really what comes to mind. Facing hardships and barriers of all sorts, from internal to external.
Oh man. I think for me it's just that traditional view that everybody has, just this blanket, big, huge piece of empty land. I always think of the Colorado and the Rocky Mountains and kind of getting over there. I think that was the big barrier. So I think the American way is just still that dream everybody has, this weird image that it's just this lost, wild wilderness out there. I think that's, you look at all the Westerns and everything, and because you live with me, I love Westerns, man. I think anybody that really likes Westerns, that's the view you have, this dream. And even now that I'm retiring at the end of this year, and it's always funny, you think, well, I'm just gonna go out west. I'm gonna go out there and get a little cabin, and then you get out there and you realize, oh hell, there's so many people out here too now. It's but just I think that original version of moving west, and anything's possible out west.
Now, with that interpretation, what pieces of media have kind of like influenced that viewpoint?
That's a tough one because I taught history, so I think it gets a little weird then because I think obviously the Westerns, I love Wagon Trains one, and Wagon Trains actually based on the Santa Fe Trail, so I love that. And then the Rifleman is always one of my favorites. I think really when I think of the West, though, I think all of Ken Burns's work that he did as far as media goes, I think that's a big one.
I'd say Red Dead Redemption 2 would be a big one. And obviously the Rifleman.
Where all of this comes from is just my love of literature. And even as a little girl, my aunts and uncles would read books all the time, and I would want to know what the stories were. And my uncles read Louis L'Amour books. That's all they would have. And they would tell me the stories, Lonesome Dove and Horsemen Pass By, and that whole genre I really fell in love with. Tony Hillerman books, where the mysteries are set in the four corners. Art, I come from a pretty poor family. I didn't really have a lot of exposure to art, except one of my uncles that loved these Louis L'Amour books took me to a museum so he could see a Remington bronze. And it really just kind of imprinted upon me this idea, even though it's rugged and hard, there's some beauty in it. And it was up to the human connection to find that beauty in that really hard landscape. And I did that through literature and art.
I grew up, I mean, the first one that comes to mind for me is Back to the Future 3. That's like the quintessential American West kind of version for me. I think especially because they come from, like the 1980s where it's normal and like things that we recognize and know, and then they go back to that, and it's sort of the characters also learning to be in that American West. But again, it is like that very fictionalized version, even for them, even in that like back, even in the media that they're in, it's even fictionalized.
So recently, Yellowstone is a pretty popular TV show. I'd say that's a pretty decent representation of kind of a more modern American West. I go to Yellowstone. I go to like old Western Clint Eastwood movies. I also think like a bunch of country songs, old country songs about, being out on the trail and having a ranch and driving cattle. Like, I think those are kind of the things that come to mind when I think about the American West represented in media.
Like the start of all stories, the one of the American West begins with a conversation about the known and the unknown. I was curious about how so many old stereotypes and legends of the West had trickled down to newer generations. Generations who have probably never listened to The Lone Ranger or have watched Have Gun, Will Travel. And the public understanding of the West circles around the excitement and danger of the frontier. This has been a key facet of the modern interpretations of the reality of the American West. As historian Michael Belils puts it in a roundtable discussion titled How the West Got Wild, we are surrounded in a United States by a mythology of our own creation that frontier violence forged the essential American character. Outside of the cultural impact, the entertainment value of these stories of cowboys, bandits, shootouts, and indigenous conflict has come to define the narratives of the West. These are the things that drive the commercial success of Western-focused movies and games, the things that keep listeners waiting until next week to find out what happened to the Lone Ranger and Tonto. The appeal of the West is, and has always been, linked to the romanticization of its reality. From radio to television to video games, with books and art sprinkled in, the evolution of media has shaped public understanding of the West. Let's now dive into the development of these narratives, exploring the evolution of Westerns across media. The emergence of radio westerns began with the release of Death Valley Days on September 30th, 1930, on NBC's Red Network, with the consensus being that the show was one of the first of its kind.
As the old morning bugle call of the covered wagon trains dies away among the echoes, another true story of Death Valley Days is brought to you by the Pacific Coast Borax Company, who give you the miracle of Borax in three convenient forms.
The show kicked off what has become a common theme between media centered around violence and peril, focusing on the everyday struggles that those moving to and settling in the West had to face. For Death Valley Days, the harsh conditions and criminal occurrences that took place in the mining town in the middle of Death Valley, California, became the lasso wrapped around the listeners' brains to keep them coming back for more. Through radio broadcasts came the stereotypical portrayal of mass violence and racist depictions of non-white characters. Voice actors portrayed the array of cultures within the West with extremely racialized tones and mannerisms. Take the Cisco Kid and his sidekick Poncho, for example, whose radio show emerged in 1956.
And now to tonight's exciting story of the Cisco Kid. Broken Cinch was an
A pair of Mexican-American vigilantes are portrayed in a stereotypical light, speaking English with a heavy Hispanic dialect. Poncho himself reflects a further stereotype, often portrayed as plump and clumsy.
Madre mía, Poncho. No wire, no bullets, nothing to use to get us out of this cell.
And the señor sheriff, he say we not get out of here. He say we stay here until the law take action.
Si, estupido.
Very stupido.
Banderos try to rob the bank and we are blamed for it. Si. Held under suspicion. Son.
No use doing that, Cisco. Do not shake the cell door down.
I know, muchacho, but I... Listen.
Hey, they yell. Cisco, they yell about lynching. Look out the window.
Si. The mob, amigo.
They come this way.
Si, they are coming to lynch us. We cannot get out of this jail, but we must, Pancho.
The lock on the door, amigo. You sure you not can open it?
I am sure.
Then we stay here and...
We will get out of this. We will. There is no way out of here, but there must be. We will not let them hang us.
The pair travel across the Southwest, taking on adventures against wealthy landholding barons, like a sort of Hispanic-American Robin Hood and Little John. However, due to their darker complexion, they are often portrayed as the criminals in these situations, dangerous vigilantes rather than enforcers of the law. The voice acting and never-ending trouble the pair get into created a Hispanic stereotype in radio that could be seen as harmful to depictions of Mexicans, especially at a time of rapid Mexican migration into the United States. The peak of the broadcast of the Cisco Kid coincided with the Bracero program, a federally mandated visa program that allowed Mexican migrants to come into the U.S. to contribute to agricultural and railroad production in the mid-20th century. The program led to the migration of more than 4.5 million individuals from Mexico to the United States between 1945 to 1968. The Cisco Kid broadcast, with its radio depictions of a Mexican anti-hero, became a reflection of the Mexican stereotype held by Americans at this time. While stereotyped against and shown to be morally ambiguous, the role of the Cisco Kid was also a heroic one in helping rural America stay afloat. the Robin Hood figure also served as a positive stereotype of the Mexican migrants coming into the United States. The 4.5 million migrants that came from the U.S.'s southern neighbor were the heroes that helped revitalize rural America. Public opinion towards Hispanic migration up to 2016 relied on these stereotypes for support. As professors Ling-Yu Liu and Sean Nicholson Crotty of the University of Missouri reported in their 2010 article, Reassessing the Impact of Hispanic Stereotypes on White Americans' Immigration Preferences, stereotypical beliefs around Mexican migration impacted favor towards immigration. In other words, the fictional narratives around Hispanic individuals increased public support of Mexican migrants. The Cisco Kid radio show, while stereotypical in its depiction and location of Mexican protagonists, reflected and solidified a semi-positive notion about Mexican migrants in the Southwest. The adventures and stunts pursued by the pair of the Kid and Pancho reflected a promotion of the little man over the wealthy big boss man. The duo served as a symbol of strength and independence of rural workers, withstanding the demands of the elites trying to disrupt their way of life.
What do you say, Pancho? Shall we go back to the town too?
Pancho say this. If I never go back to that town, it's much too soon.
Very well, then. Come, Pancho. We go.
Where are you heading for, Cisco?
Who knows? For Cisco and Pancho, there is always someplace else. Yellow!
Logo!
Another hugely popular program, the famous radio-turned-TV series Gunsmoke, became a prime reflection of violence and peril along the Santa Fe Trail.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of Gunsmoke.
Taking place in 1870s Dodge City, Kansas, a vital stopping point along the Santa Fe Trail, Gunsmoke explores the trials and tribulations of Town Marshal Matt Dillon. First airing on radio in 1952, before its TV adaptation 3 years later in 1955, Gunsmoke created an environment of drama and danger never before expressed to the American audiences. Often failing to save the lives of those who lived in the violent racist town of Dodge City, Marshal Matt Dillon became a reflection of a man who had lost himself within Gunsmoke's narrative of an American West filled with death and despair. The show catered to its adult viewers, touching on topics like racial and sexual violence, not suitable for younger listeners. While the TV show would reduce the extreme graphic nature of the radio broadcast, it was still a very radical depiction of violence within the American West. However, the reality of the American West, Dodge City, Kansas included, was less extreme than the media suggested. Historians like Stephen Aaron have proven that in reality, Dodge City was a fairly safe spot to be if you were a traveler along the Santa Fe's trail in the peak of the 19th century. Aaron reports that homicide rates per 100,000 persons in Dodge City from 1876 to 1886 were around 50 to 100,000. That is 0.05%. Put that in perspective, that's about the same odds you could find a four-leaf clover walking in a field. Death in Dodge at the hands of another was an extremely rare occurrence. However, Gunsmoke did not portray it to be that way, and its 20 seasons of airing on TV reflected the success of this formula for violence. In an article titled Shots in the Dark, Television and Western Myth by historian Elliot West, states that in 1957, evening broadcast aired 33 westerns, taking up a third of all airspace. These other shows followed the same grit and grimy formula as Gunsmoke, having a primarily white male gunslinging protagonist defend the rough-and-tumble small town they called home. The outline used to describe Gunsmoke's Matt Dillon can be seen in other Western protagonists, like the Rifleman's Lucas McCain. The American West, as defined by media, became a model for strong, macho protagonists with morally ambiguous motives centered around the success and protection of their family, friends, and home. Anyone who tried to threaten them would have to pay with their lives. Matt Dillon and Lucas McCain, despite the violence they faced, always came out on top, advancing through constant bloodshed present in the Wild Wild West. As media evolved, this core staple of protection of family and home remained, often in the hands of strong masculine figures. As radio fell out of popularity and technology boomed heading into the 21st century, the challenge and dangers of the American West began to be translated into the format of video games. While the Oregon Trail game emerged as a type of yes or no to choose your own adventure game, it would be a defining point for the Western video game industry. the game created a market for video games centered in the West, and the market responded to the demand. The boom of Western video games, like Boot Hill, continued to reflect narratives of violence and risk within the American West. Boot Hill was a two-player arcade shooter, where you and your friend would be placed in a Dodge City shootout. To be the victor meant having the fastest draw. The focus of violence in these games continued to highlight guns and cowboys as the staple of the American West. But by far the most impactful video game that has defined and continues to define what a Western-style video game should be is the Red Dead Redemption series. Red Dead Redemption, published by American video game studio Rockstar Games in 2010, explores the outlaw-turned family man John Marston's hunt for his former gang members after his family is confronted by U.S. federal agents. Marston pursues the multiple members of the old Vanderlyn gang still present in the three counties surrounding him, counties designed off the southwestern regions of Texas into New Mexico. The game, complete with guns historically accurate to the turn of the 19th and 20th centuries, offer the player control of the narratives that define TV protagonists in the likes of Gunsmoke and The Rifleman. The game and its premise of allowing players to control the narrative of how they wanted to live out the American West resulted in a smashing success. Since its release date in 2010, the game has sold 23 million copies and has been re-released for updated consoles. I was a part of the 23 million. Growing up in Texas, the ability to live out my cowboy adventure was a dream come true. Choosing who and when to shoot, helping towns, or causing hell made me feel like I was living my real-life cowboy story that I always wanted to. The initial success of Red Dead Redemption was drastically overshadowed by the success of its successor, Red Dead Redemption 2, in 2018. The prequel explores the life of Arthur Morgan, a leading member of the struggling Vanderlyn gang, of which John Marston was a member, before the events of the first game. The game had an updated morality system. It dove deep into the stories about the men and women on the run from the Pinkertons, a real-life detective agency that was hired out to track down outlaws across the modernizing American West. Red Dead Redemption 2 and its story were a smashing success, becoming one of the top-selling games of all time, with 57 million copies sold to date. The story told in the game is extremely impactful, as you feel connections to Arthur and the traveling party of criminals and swindlers. As a player, you learn to love the world and your allies. You also learn to hate the individuals who try to infringe on that world. The end of the story quite literally brought me to tears, feeling a completely contrasting feeling to the rough-and-tumble persona I'd tried to live out through Arthur. The Red Dead Redemption series offers, like other forms of media we have looked at through this episode, a continuous stereotypical approach to the American West and the things that captivated the audience about it. The player feels the emotions generated by the game, and rather than the extreme macho nature of the TV characters being felt, the player begins to feel joy, sadness, hope and despair, anger and reconciliation. While the extreme violence that sells the American West is still present in the game, I would argue that the Red Dead Redemption series attempts to present the often true struggles of what could occur to individuals in the West. Take, for example, the transformation of Arthur Morgan's health in Red Dead Redemption 2. Struck by tuberculosis, the player sees the toll of the disease and the effect industrialization might have on health as well. Throughout the game, Arthur begins to fade, gradually looking sicker and sicker, impacting how the player must play the game. Tuberculosis was a rampant threat in the American West, the cause of nearly 25% of deaths in the 1800s. For Red Dead Redemption 2 to include this disease that the player has to consider while playing as Arthur provides that much more of a historically accurate feel to the game. I think Red Dead Redemption 2 does a good job of touching on the realistic struggles of minorities in the West, a sign of progress in modern depictions of the West in media. While walking around the vast towns and environments of the Red Dead Redemptions, signs of suffragist movement appear with women marching in the streets preaching for the expansion of the right to vote. When visiting Lemoyne County, Red Dead Redemption's recreation of the Deep South, the effects of racist Jim Crow-era segregation and sharecropping run wild, threatening the safety and freedom of the African-American gang members in the Vanderlyn gang. Arguably, the most impactful depiction in Red Dead Redemption is the struggle faced by the Rapide Indian Reserve, an undersupplied and struggling reservation that the player must help as a part of Arthur's adventures with Charles Smith, a black Indian member of the Vanderlyn gang. This offers a counter to the previous portrayal of Native Americans in digital depictions. As written in John Will's article, Pixel Cowboys and Silicon Gold Mines, Video Games of the American West, previous video games had preyed upon the public depictions of cowboys as gunmen and Indians as warmongers. Those that played these games sought out this narrative. This is what the audience of Westerns were familiar with, so there was no need to change the formula. Red Dead Redemption takes a different approach towards the Native struggle of this time, placing Arthur in the middle of aiding Native resistance to the confinement of the reservation. In the mission Honor Amongst Thieves, the player is tasked with stealing from a military supply wagon. While in the game, wagon robberies are common, this one deals with something larger than just money. It deals with the health of a reservation. Following a successful mission, three further missions helping the reserve follow, with the chapter ending in an all-out raid on a U.S. fort as a final attempt of resistance. Red Dead Redemption harnesses the empathy of the player in the situation, creating a recognition of the real-life struggle that occurred between Native American groups and the U.S. Army throughout the 1800s. While these missions might be seen as extreme, the existing video game narrative of cowboys as heroes and Native Americans as warmongers is flipped 180 degrees. The success of the Red Dead Redemption series reflects its ability to hold social awareness of the often true and sad historical realities of the American Southwest. The mixing of narrative extremes and the historical accuracies is a delicate balance that is executed to near perfection in the Red Dead Redemption series, marking an era of social awareness of Western realities in the modern day. Today, efforts to portray the stories of Western life that Americans find a connection to continues to reflect the delicate balance of extremes and social awareness. Characters that failed to be represented in previous media, like a large number of African-American cowboys and bounty hunters, are finally getting the light they deserve. Take, for example, the reemergence of African-American bounty hunter Bass Reeves, deemed today as a blueprint for the stories of the Lone Ranger. Reeves has now received notice by Hollywood, as the TV show Lawman Bass Reeves was released in the fall of 2023 under the direction of Taylor Sheridan, the director of the critically acclaimed Yellowstone. Other depictions of the West, as well as the wild nature that defined the frontier's attractiveness, have continued to propagate in TVs and movies. Scenes of graphic shootouts and gun violence have appeared in shows that take influence from Westerns, such as AMC's The Walking Dead. The conquering of nature, also associated with the West, has been replicated in reality TV, like Ice Road Truckers and Deadliest Catch. While not the traditionally depicted American West, the value of danger and peril that keeps viewers returning to Westerns like Gunsmoke are still present across these shows. Now, where does the Santa Fe Trail fall into this? It sadly falls in the background of the Western narrative. While it does go through Dodge City and is a vital part of the Gunsmoke episode The Pack Rat, its historical use as an overland trade route leaves it unknown and unthought of in the mind of the public compared to the familiar perils that were faced in the better-known Oregon Trail. The lack of fame is by no means the fault of the Santa Fe Trail. Its vital role in facilitating communication and economic foundations with Mexico saw the rise of trade hubs along the path of the trail. However, there is a lack of awareness on the trail and education up to the university level. As to the blank eye, it is just another trade route in the larger American story of Western expansion. At face value, the Santa Fe Trail is, for a lack of a better word, boring compared to the stories of the places and trails that surround it. However, with the promotion of public exhibits and educational materials such as this podcast, excitement could be brought back to the Santa Fe Trail. It is a complex, multicultural economic battleground centered on a balancing act of maintaining friendly trade connection while imposing cultural infringement on those around the trail. While media depictions have promoted the extremes of the American West, it is these extremes that have been what have defined public perception. Media today is now presented with the challenge to adopt historical realities while still maintaining some of this violence and peril that sells these Western stories. The Santa Fe Trail can play a part in that and has the potential to be a focal point in the form of media in the future. This episode of Wheels Across the West was written and narrated by me, Greg Picarni. Our producer and engineer is Kyle Jackson, and our executive producer is Jay Sexton, director of the Kinder Institute at the University of Missouri. This podcast is recorded at KBIA Studios in Columbia, Missouri, distributed in partnership with the Missouri Humanities Council. I'm peachy keen. I'm fine and dandy. I've been found, I am so gosh darned confused.